What's good, family? I'm Nikisha Elise Williams, the host of Black and Published podcast and the author of the forthcoming novel, The Seven Daughters of Dupree. This historical fiction novel is about the secrets kept between mothers and daughters over the course of seven generations and is told backwards in time from 1995 to 1860. The Seven Daughters of Dupree will be released on January 27th, 2026, but is available for pre-order now. So if you can, please consider pre-ordering The Seven Daughters of Dupree today. Hey, Black and Published family, it's Nikisha. I want to say thank you for rocking with me these last few years. Over the course of these five seasons, I've shared with you the journeys of countless writers, including myself. I've told you about starting out as a self-published author and when my first nonfiction book came out in 2022. I have a new novel coming out in January entitled The Seven Daughters of Dupree. The story is a generational epic about the secrets kept between mothers and daughters over the course of seven generations, told backwards in time from 1995 to 1860, and it's available for pre-order now, everywhere you get your books. I am beyond excited for this novel. It is my first Big Five book, more on that later, and I'd like to make it a success, and I need your help to do that. If you can't, please consider pre-ordering The Seven Daughters of Dupree today. Now let's get to the episode.
Some of the ideas that folks have about traditional publishing is also bullshit. It's truly hating from outside of the club.
So y'all know I couldn't end the season without a bonus episode, right? What's good? I'm Nikisha Elise Williams, and this is Black and Published on the Mahogany Books Podcast Network, bringing you the journeys of writers, poets, playwrights, and storytellers of all kinds. Author Disha Filya is back on the podcast today to talk with me about publishing, to help clear up some misconceptions and misinformation so that writers don't get scammed.
Again, this isn't because people are dumb. It's really because people really want to be published, but gotta take a beat and take a step back and make sure that that desire isn't rooted in something else that we might also need to work on.
Disha, along with the graphic designer Diamond Williamson, created a 20-page infographic resource entitled Writer Beware that takes a look at the distinctions among different publishing paths in order to dispel misinformation and help writers avoid predatory publishers. The resource is a complement to Jane Friedman's Key Book Publishing Paths. It's a chart which breaks down all the avenues writers can take to publication. I have linked both graphics in the show notes. Now, let's get to the conversation where we break it all down. That and more is up next when Black and Published continues. Let's talk about this industry, child.
Let's chop it up.
All right, so I have your Writer Beware and the Jane Friedman Book Publishing Path for 2025
yes.
and 2026 so that we can be clear.
Yes.
Disha, why did you make this guide?
So it's because I joined Threads. I don't know how the algorithm over there works, but I am mostly connected to indie writers, specifically indie romance writers and readers. So, you know, not my genre. It's a different neighborhood in the literary community, but that's what Threads pulled me into. And it's been, you know, well over a year now. And I think because I engage the posts, that's the majority of the content on my feed on Threads. I not only learn about these different writers and their books, but just this a different kind of community, a different neighborhood in the literary community than I am usually in. So I have proceeded to act like a guest. And so I don't respond or get in the conversations too much. I'm mostly reading and learning. Every now and then, a conversation will come up about publishing in general, and there's a lot of traditional versus indie talk. And I think that's also not my business. because I don't know how many times, I or anyone can say, like, it's not a hierarchy, in terms of better, who's a better writer or whatever. These are just, as Jane Friedman lays out in her Publishing Paths resource, these are different paths. That's how I see it. But, there's misinformation and antagonism on both sides. And I hate being a both sides person, right? But what I tend to see at times is this shitting on traditional publishing, which is fine. There's a lot to critique about traditional publishing. What pisses me off is when it's misinformation. And so, just like those of us who are traditionally published should not be like, oh, indie publishing, that means it's lower quality. They weren't edited. That's bullshit. And so some of the ideas that folks have about traditional publishing is also bullshit. It's truly hating from outside of the club, right? So
Can't even get in.
I hate to say it like that, but it's like, you would know these things either if you read or you were inside the club. So again, I'm not trying to be elitist about it. And I also know that those lines, again, are in some ways artificial, as evidenced by your entire career, ma'am, being both.
And that's really why we're here today, because I see the conversations and I don't respond. But like I started wanting to be traditional, got very close with my first self-published book, but never made it. And then went the indie route and did six indie titles before I did.
Yes, 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 yes,
Yeah,
yes.
six indie titles, five novels, and a poetry collection before I got a traditional deal, which was a work for hire through a university press. Small money, but first time getting money nonetheless. And then the big five. So let's start. I've always looked at it like I did a workshop last year for the Jacksonville Public Library Book Festival called Publishing. There's Levels to This. And what I noticed the most was that people who didn't want to self-publish because they don't want to do all the work that self-publishing requires, because as the name says, you do everything yourself, but they don't try to go the extreme traditional route of getting the agent and doing the queries and going on submission in that route. So then they end up in this weird gray space between hybrid vanity,
Yes.
whatever it's being called or
Yes.
marketed as, boutique, and they get scammed.
Yes. Exactly. Right.
Let's teach the babies.
They get scammed and then they make posts like the one I saw that said, this is why I'm never doing traditional publishing again, because they got scammed. And the Virgo in me and the nerd in me wanted to be like, excuse me, well, actually, that wasn't traditional publishing. And so the resources I created was my, well, actually, that, if you're getting scammed, not to say again that there's not bias and a world of problems with traditional publishing, but one thing they're not doing is taking your money from out of your bank account. Like, they're not asking you for money. And so to me, it's as simple as that. If you have to pay somebody, that's not traditional publishing. So our 18-page infographic could have been one page saying that. But I really wanted to look at the whole landscape. I really wanted to amplify the resources that Jane Friedman and others have invested a lot of time and energy. It's like, it's right there. So Jane has made this. So no
And she
need for
updates it
me
every
every
year.
year. Yep. And no need for me to reinvent the wheel. But let me just put some context around this conversation. And so it was very specific. I didn't replicate what Jane did, but it was more amplifying this idea that there's so much, if you're not in these lanes, these paths, it's so easy to swallow misinformation about it. So let's clear that up. But also, I wanted to talk about the emotional part, because I don't think the reason most people get scammed is because they're stupid. I think people get scammed because they really want to be published. And this is an industry, whether it's traditional or indie, there's so much rejection that when an offer comes along, sometimes we don't use our best judgment because we're so happy to finally be chosen, to finally get an opportunity to get the validation that comes with someone making us an offer. And we ignore that little part of us inside that says, know about this. Or we don't do our due diligence because we're afraid of what we might find out about this publisher that we think is going to be our only opportunity. And as traditionally published authors, it's the same thing, like, especially when it comes to an agent, for example. Instead of asking around and seeing the situation as mutual, a mutually beneficial business arrangement, it's like somebody finally said yes. If you've queried dozens, if not hundreds, of agents, if you've been doing this for a decade or more, the last thing you want to do is say no to an agent who's saying yes to you. That sounds
Crazy.
completely crazy, right? And yet, if this is not a good agent or a good agent for you, that's exactly what you have to do because it is better to have no agent than a bad agent. It is better to have no book than a book deal where you get scammed. So I wanted to address the heart of the matter as well.
Okay, and so I'm going to link both graphics into the show notes. Jane Friedman's 2025, 2026 Key Book Publishing Path. It's 2 pages talking about traditional publishing and then non-traditional, as well as Disha's Writer Beware, which provides more context. So among the non-traditional publishing paths, we'll start there. There's hybrid publishers, paid publishing services, self-publishing, and social. The lowest lift is social because it's your blog, it's your Substack, it's your newsletter, it's whatever you're doing online to generate an audience. What do you encounter in the author space? Because I'm not on Substack like that.
So many of the rules in publishing and the conventional wisdom, there are always exceptions, right? So I was actually warning a former student of mine, like, hey, I noticed you've been putting your stories out on Substack. Publishers are going to consider that previously published. And if you're building a collection, a certain percentage has to be unpublished content. So you might want to be careful. And then he hit me with the big flex. He was like, yeah, that's just like my play stories. I got my own collection over here that I'm not even putting out. I'm like, okay, well, go on with your bad self.
Okay.
But I was worried for him with that because that can be a trap because there are publishers who say that. But perhaps publishers are looking at Substack differently because a lot of big name writers are publishing content on there, whether it's work in progress or newsletters or whatever. But, as writers, we've always been masters of invention. And so we are reinventing these channels. And publishing seems like, at least in this instance, they're taking note of that. And oh, I wanted to shout out the co-creator of the infographic, Diamond Williamson, as the graphic designer behind it. When I said on Threads that I wanted to do this, she was like, I would like to do the art. And I was like, bet. And if you go to her site, she has a fantastic portfolio and I loved her work. And we had some conversations. She gave me a proposal. We were aligned and we did it.
And so that's how the infographic and things came together, and a little on social publishing. But it's the three other non-traditional paths of self-publishing, hybrid, and paid publishing services that kind of get people confused. Self-publishing shouldn't, and I'll just run it down really quickly. As the name says, you do everything yourself. So after you finish writing the book, you should hire independent editors
Say it.
to give you notes multiple times. And then there are different editors that you should hire. There's your developmental editor that's going to help you whip the story itself into shape, looking for those plot holes and things like that. Then you may have to get a line editor or a copy editor. When I was self-publishing, my copy editor also did line edits. Sometimes you might even want to pay a proofreader. I would read my book cover to cover out loud to catch the errors, as many as I could, before I ever submitted or uploaded it to anything for publication. But you do all of that yourself. I hired editors, I hired the graphic designer for all of my covers. I made sure that my website was done. And then when it started to come time for marketing and promotion, I wrote my own press releases. Yes, my background is in television as a news producer. So I had a network of people who worked across the country at different news stations that I would just pitch myself to. Can I come on your show on your morning show, on your weekend show, because every local news station has some kind of show where they'll have like community people come on and talk about their work. And I always pitched it to a news angle. And then that's how I showed myself promoting my book, because I couldn't be outside everywhere at all the festivals doing all the things. Where I live, they also have local events every week where I would go pop up a tent and have books on the table and just have different materials. But self-publishing, you're creating the buzz around yourself, and it's going to be as big as you can make it yourself. You're building a platform from the ground up in addition to publishing your own books. Self-publishing is work. It is very hard. It's very difficult. It does cost, it can cost a lot of money. And so that is why some people decide to go toward what they think is hybrid publishing, but may end up with a paid publishing service. What is the difference?
So what I learned, and this was all an education for me, I did not know the specifics until I started this project with Diamond. They would see the term hybrid, and it means that both parties, the publisher and the writer, both invest money and both reap or yield dividends. So everybody's paying into it and everybody gets paid on the back end. And the writer is providing the book, the content, and the publisher is providing the publishing and marketing services. But all of that should be laid out in a contract of what exactly is this hybrid relationship? What does it entail? And so that means it's sort of a mix of publishing and self, in that the publisher does some things, but the author is paying for that. That's a big, big difference. You are paying in a hybrid situation. You also are paying in a paid publishing situation. But in that one, that's the one where everything that comes out is yours, right? You pay all of the money. It's your book. You're paying for certain services, and then you have a book in the world, and then you kind of go from there. Now, I hope I'm not misspeaking on that.
I went back to Jane's graph to see.
Okay.
And so Jane says how the money works. Authors fund book publication in exchange for assistance. Cost varies. Some firms handle all aspects from start to finish in subcontract, paying workers on authors' behalf. With smaller outfits of individuals, they may connect authors with freelance help. They do not sell at all. The selling is up to the author. Some offer paid marketing packages, assist with the book launch, or offer paid promotion opportunities. Some services assist authors in setting up basic distribution available to self-published authors, like on IngramSpark and Amazon Kindle Direct Publishing.
Which, and that's all paid.
Mm-hmm.
Right. With the hybrid, it's like it's understood that like they're going to do that. Publisher's doing what a traditional publisher is going to do, but the author is paying, whereas they would not be with traditional publishing.
And so I didn't really understand that distinction until we had this conversation maybe a few weeks ago. So once I started self-publishing, there were other writers I knew or who knew me who would then ask me, well, can you publish my book? And my first line was, everything I'm going to do for you, you can do for yourself.
Do for yourself, yeah.
And some would be like, well, tell me how. And I would tell them how. And others would be like, yeah, I'm not about to do all that work.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. And so like the very first person that I published, I didn't charge because like we going into this together.
Right. Because it's a learning opportunity for you.
Right. It was a learning opportunity for me about how to do it for someone else. And then I didn't want to take their money and like I'm playing and experiment. So I was like, I'll eat this. But then after that, I developed a contract. It was a list of services, but like they were non-negotiable because I'm not going to put something out with my company on it. To play. That was another thing that I did while self-publishing. Some self-publishing distributors, if you don't have your own imprint, they will put their name as their imprint.
Oh no.
And I was like, if I'm doing all the work, we're gonna go down
Ain't
here
no
to,
way.
This, to this tax collector's office and file my LLC paperwork.
No, that's right.
And get my little sub biz and have my name and hang my shingle on my front door and be in business.
Yes.
And so like that's, I did start my own LLC from there. And then as I started publishing other authors, there's a contract. There was a year period. There were due dates. I outlined everything that I would do, how much everything costs. And then I would contract out to the editors and the graphic designers and things like that. But I also took care of their copywriting, making sure they had their ISBN number so that your book could be bought by indie bookstores, major retailers, as well as your local library. And
what I learned was that I was offering the hybrid publishing package, but not really understanding. And then also in the contract, there was the royalty stipulation about how
Right.
often that you were going to get paid, what the split was going to be, and when I
Yes.
would pay it. And I pay royalties in March and September, no later than the 5th of that month. And if anybody asks me, how many books did I sell? What did I receive? I have a spreadsheet. It's not a formal profit and loss because I'm not a business girly, but I do have
I
a
can tell you how
tracker.
many books.
I do have a tracker of how many books you sold, what the outlets were,
Go
and
ahead.
what the royalties were
Yes.
from it. And I have no problem sharing that with anyone. And what I found was that a lot of people who were thinking they were getting a publisher and were very excited, then on that back end, there was no contract. They spent all this money. They've gotten no
Right.
royalties. They don't know what happened with their project. And then sometimes the quality of the book wasn't even all that good.
Right. That part. And you get what you pay for, and sometimes you don't get what you paid for. So, and that's the hardest part. And with paid publishing, not hybrid, all the proceeds come to you, the writer, because it's literally you just paid them to do certain things. The only money that goes to the entity, if I'm not mistaken, is what you pay up
Your
front.
initial investment.
Right. I think that's another thing that people will say, and I'm sure you've heard this. I don't want to give them any of my money. If my book is $10, then when people pay that $10, I want the $10. They don't want a percentage of that $10.
And so, for that, what I would do as the publisher for the authors that I worked with, in the contract, I said, I will send you your first 25 books. That'll be out of my costs. I'm going to send you your first 25 copies. And then, if you want to go out and sell them and go to book festivals
Right.
and enter, you can do that. And then I had other authors, they were doing events and like, can I buy my own stock? And I was like, yeah. And I would just, I'd place the order, have it sent to wherever they needed it to send. And then they would just reimburse me at the production cost and go out and sell their books because that was the way that I was doing it. And at the time, I always said I didn't offer marketing because I didn't know how. Like I was using my own like television network, but most of the authors that I've published, I think all except one, have appeared on my podcast and I've taken with me or are out doing their own thing. And so you have to, for those who want to be published and are looking at hybrid publishers, I think the biggest thing is knowing who it is that you're working with and reading and getting their reputation. I'll say for me, you can't find my reputation because I don't advertise that I publish people. Because like you had to know somebody that knew somebody.
Right,
That
but
knew somebody.
now this show, this episode, it's out there now.
It's out there now, and I'm and still it is at my discretion.
Like,
So
do
I
not
might tell
call
you
me.
no.
But I think that you broke down for me in a way that's really helpful, in a way that it doesn't just come from seeing it on the paper, exactly what a hybrid publisher does. And it makes sense then that they would also get something on the back end. But some of these places that are paid publishing, where they're not getting anything on the back end, they're calling themselves hybrid publishers because hybrid publishers are legitimized. They're legitimate. And so people just kind of throw that term hybrid around. And so somebody's like, oh, no, it's fine because it's a hybrid press or it's a hybrid publisher when it's actually not. So I think one key thing is if they're not getting something on the back end, would you say that that's like a telltale sign? This is not a hybrid publisher. They just want your money up front.
Yeah, if they don't have a contract that's stipulating what the split is after their work is done, I would say that's a telltale sign because once they've received your money and given you the product of the book, and especially if they're also not handling your distribution, if they don't have the account to set up the distribution through IngramSpark or Amazon's platform, which is now Kindle Direct Publishing, and you have to do that yourself, I wouldn't consider them a hybrid publisher. Like they're all about, okay, we're going to format, outline, whatever your book, and then everything else, you have to take it from there. That's paid publishing services, and that's something that you may want to steer clear of. And another thing I would say I think is a telltale sign is that if you talk to someone just like in an inquiry call and they're following up with you every week, like, how do you, like, so when are you going to sign? When are you going to say something? That's also a sign that they're just after the money and they're not really after the product. I remember when I was in just left undergrad. I'm 21 years old. I had my little thesis And I was like, maybe I want to get this published because everybody wants to be published when you think you've written something,
Right.
right? Don't know
We all
nothing.
do. We all
And
do.
I looked something up and then I got a call and I was talking to the people and they're like, so when do you think you can have us the full manuscript? And I was like, whoa, like we haven't
Right.
even negotiated anything. Like something in my 21-year-old self was like, why are you pressuring me?
Right, that
And like
pressure.
this is not legitimate. Like if you feel pressure by the entity that you're working with, then I think that's another sign because anyone that's going to publish your book, also, if they give you like some crazy quick turnaround time, that should be
Yeah.
another sign
Right.
because book publishing takes time. Any author that I've worked with, it's been about a year. And some have been longer than a year, but it's been at least a year for
Yes.
publication because I'm not going to put anything out with anything affiliated with me that I'm not proud to support. And
Absolutely.
so if the company is really just about the money, I think you'll notice that they'll say, oh, we can get your book together in 2 weeks or 3 weeks. That's not a plus.
Not at all. Not at all. And I'm glad you talked earlier about editing and the importance of it, but also that there's multiple types of editing. Because when people think that editing is just copy editing, the idea of a developmental editor is not on a lot of folks' radar. And so that's one of the things, as you noted, that, slows down the process. But I think so much of this gets into the mindset of the writer. Like, why are you in a hurry? And I think sometimes it's the validation. And talking to people who have come out of MFA programs, sometimes there's been fostered their spirit of competition. And so it's, I've written something, and so I'm going to get it published. Or maybe agents came to the campus, and Carmen Maria Machado has a great Substack newsletter called Cup of Stars. And one of the posts is on the business of publishing. And she was talking about being at Iowa Writers' Workshop, the most prestigious writing program in the country, and how agents came on campus and none of them wanted to talk to her, but they talked to her friends. And so she sat with her book for years after that and kept working. And in the end, felt like that was the best thing for her and for that book. It needed that time, it needed that work, it needed that care. But coming out of, depending on what your experience was in an MFA program, it could be, I need this quickly to validate me. I need a book. And it's like, you do not get a second chance to debut, on a particular, I mean, you can debut at different, in
Levels,
different levels, but at a, on a traditional level, you get the one debut. And so, she talked about it being worth the wait. But if whatever is happening with you emotionally is pushing, 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 it's a lot to overcome when somebody's like, we can do this in 2 weeks. You know what I mean? Like that, I get it. Again, this isn't because people are dumb. It's really because people really want to be published, but we got to take a beat and take a step back and make sure that that desire isn't rooted in something else that we might also need to work on. Anne Lamott wrote in one of her books years ago, and I took this to heart when I hadn't published anything. She's like, publishing is not going to fix all your problems. Whatever mental health challenges you have, they will be exacerbated by your book. I'm like, damn, Anne, come on. That's what I got to look forward to. But it's basically like whatever that hole is that you got, and maybe it's a little wound from being in a MFA program where people were competitive and unkind and your confidence was beaten down. Publishing the book can't be the thing that heals that wound. It sounds counterintuitive, I know, but you need to heal that wound to heal the wound. And there's nothing wrong with publishing the book, but it's not like, oh, this is going to be the thing that fixes everything. That's too much pressure to put on a book, or this is going to make people take me seriously as a writer, or this is going to give me permission to take myself seriously as a writer. I think those can be connected, but ultimately, if you've got haters in your life, like that's your biggest problem right there. Who is it that you have in your ear that's not supporting you taking your time? Who do you feel like you've got to prove something to? And sometimes it's your like parents or even,
Your
I
partner.
mean, your partner, because we know what it's like to be married to your ops. I'm sorry, I'm not telling them too much
No,
secrets.
you. It's fine. It's accurate. I'm gonna tell the story in January. So,
Okay.
here we are.
Preview, y'all. We have both been married to our ops. So the book is not going to change the fact that you married to your ops. So
It's not.
deal with whatever is making you feel like you need validation or you need to rush and get this done so that you can feel better about yourself or people can see you in a different light or all of that. Just let the book be the book.
And
It's
also
just too
realize that
much.
like good writing doesn't expire. And
Right.
so even as you navigate which publishing path that you want to take, and so far we've only talked about like the non-traditional route, and we're going to get to traditional coming up. But each project you do, if you are at one level, will get better. You'll get better at the craft, and you will continue to get better. It's the one career where it doesn't matter what you look like, what size you are. All that matters is the work good, and do people enjoy it? And you have a lifetime to work to whatever your level of perfection is, if there's ever such a thing, right? And from my own journey, like I can say there are probably lots of things wrong with my first self-published novel, For Women, but it was the best that I could do at that time. And by the time I stopped self-publishing, when I had my last novel, Beyond Bourbon Street, that was from that thesis that I wrote in undergrad. I graduated from college in 2008. By the time that book came out, it was 2020. I had years with those characters and years of letting that story develop and get better. And even still, I know there are parts that I could have shortened, I could have tightened. And at the very end, I just didn't want to do the work anymore. I was kind of over it. And I was like,
Yeah, when
yeah,
you're done, you're done.
like it's gonna be what it is.
I have still not read Church Ladies cover to cover. I still have not read it covered as a physical book. It,
That's
I've read excerpts, I've read entire stories at events, but the just sit down me in that book.
Wow, I didn't know that. But yeah, like
Haven't listened to the audiobook. I mean, I've listened to bits of it, like I said, but
you were done.
I was done. I was
Yeah.
done.
And I think I heard you talk about that. Like, there was something that you, when you did the London version, you included a bonus story and it didn't make the Americans. It was like, I'm tired of working on this. I don't feel
Yeah,
like
I
it.
didn't. That story needed a lot of work, even though West Virginia University Press accepted it as part of the partial manuscript that we submitted. We submitted a manuscript of six stories. Eventually, I published nine, but it was after I took that one out because I was like, it doesn't feel as strong as the others, and it doesn't tie thematically as well as the others, but I'm not interested enough in it. When you like, I don't really fuck with you no more like that. Like, it was cute for a minute. We hung out.
Like it was a bop when it was, but now it's not.
Right. So I put it to the side and like, that was like 2019. The book came out in 2020. And then with the UK version, they were like, do you have any other stories lying around that, could be a good fit? And at first I was about to say no. And then I was like, oh, I remember there's this other story. Must love IPAs. And so I went in and I spent some more time with the characters and revised it. And I'm proud to have it in that Waterstones special edition of the book. But yeah, I was done, done.
And so, like, I hope what people get from this brief exchange, like, I know we're kikiing and having a good time and cutting up, is that you knew that you weren't going to do the work to make that story make the American version of the collection. Just like I knew that I could have taken another 2 or 3 months with Beyond Bourbon Street before I released it and tightened it up even a bit more. And so, no matter what you're doing, I think people have to really lean in and listen to that intuition, into that introspection. Beyond what it is that you want, you know when something is right and you know when something is off. And so instead of like falling head over heels into your ego of like, oh, somebody wants me and they're going to publish my book, check with yourself first, like really sit with it. Because again, if you're feeling pressure, nothing in publishing, tr traditional or indie should move extremely fast. And so,
Right.
like, if the
Right.
timeline seems unreasonable, or like you're feeling pressure from your publisher or your editor, whoever the case may be, maybe like sit with that, because that doesn't really exist in other levels. And so
That's
let's
right.
talk about the traditional paths and all the different levels there.
Okay.
We've got
Ooh.
right sales, no advance, smaller presses, professional and educational, university and scholarly, and Big Five. Everybody wants that Big Five contract. Why would you say that is ill-advised?
Because all Big Five contracts are not created equally. All
Well,
Big Five deals are not created equally. Are you a lead title? Because that's going to come with some resources and attention and support that books that are not lead titles don't get. So that's one thing why it's not just Big Five or bust. Like, I don't think anybody should have that mindset. And not just because my first two books were not published Big Five, but having had that experience, and my book is a lead title. So I think it's really thinking about what can you live with and not have your entire sense of self as a person and as a writer dependent on these outcomes and these logistics of deals that you have no control over. And this gets tricky because I don't want to tell people not to dream, right? Because I know there are people who are like, I'm going to get published by a Big Five publisher and I'm going to be on the New York Times bestseller list. I am claiming that. More power to you, sis. I don't move that way. I never have. And I think it's because my writing career, like so many people's, has been a long game. Like, I started like 25 years ago. Church Ladies came out when I was 49 years old. And so I've had a lot of experiences along the way, including getting to know writers and watching them and just observing their path. So it's not just what do these things look like in the headlines, but what are their lives like? What are their experiences like? Asking questions. And then also, you can just watch people, and sometimes they tell you things, without you even you having to ask. And so, what was really a game changer for me was being in the company of a writer who is very acclaimed, who I admired a lot, and getting up close and personal and seeing just how miserable she was because she didn't have this set of awards. And I'm like, but these books are amazing and there's this acclaim and, and I was like, okay. And I had not finished my novel. I had been working on that novel at this point at like for 7 years. This was right before I started the stories that would become Church Ladies. But I made a promise to myself then. I said, I don't want to be like this. I don't want to have worked this hard only to be this miserable. And so I saw that I had to define for myself what success was going to look like for me. That didn't mean that I didn't aspire and that wouldn't welcome accolades and awards and all of that. Great. But I was like, that can't be the thing that makes me happy, though. That can't be the thing that my happiness or how I feel about myself, that can't be the thing because I don't control that. And maybe I'm a little control freak. I don't know. But it just didn't make sense to me that to put something that's at the whim, literally, of other people, because publishing has biases. Publishing can be people's whims. It's not a meritocracy. I mean, what you were saying earlier is true about doing your best work. But that's all you can do. That's all you can do. And also, best work is subjective. Like, you can write an amazing book, and no book is everybody's cup of tea. That's also the thing. Timing is crazy. There's luck. There's all of these different factors. And I don't want to be bounced around in the pinball machine of all of that. What is going to ground me? What grounds me is I love writing. I love that I get to do this. Before, we went live here, we were talking about like bullshit that's happening in my professional life. But at the end of the day, I'm like, these are the problems I get to have. Bet, So trying to keep that perspective of I'm doing what I love. I absolutely like, there's nothing more fun to me. I mean, obviously, like sex and stuff like that, but I love writing. don't want to get it twisted, but I have fun writing. I nerd out, I wild out, I have a good time. I like being with writers. Like, this is what I get to do. I am successful. If I never sell another book, if I never win another award, I am successful as a writer today, right now. If Church Ladies had never gotten an award, I would still consider myself a success because my goal for myself with Church Ladies was I need to just finish this book. I need to finish a book. I have been trying to write a novel at that point since 2007. I just want to finish something. That's what made me feel successful. I finally finished something. So I set the bar. Maybe that's considered low. I don't know. That's, but I set it for me. I set it for me.
I think that's a good thing to take away because no matter how you get into writing, publishing is a separate animal, and what success looks like
Yes.
will change over time. For me, when I was writing for women, I lost that manuscript and had to start over. So when I finished it, like that was the first measure of success. And then when I
Yes.
learned how to self-publish and I was okay at it, and I thought I was pretty good at it and was able to do it, then I just kept doing it because I enjoyed the writing. There were stories that I wanted to tell. I had the freedom to do it, and I now have this know-how. And so, like, that was successful for me. And I was
Yes.
moving along and doing other things as an indie author. The reason that I stopped self-publishing was that Miami Book Fair that we were at, and we got rained out. And
And you're like, I ain't doing this.
I was like, I'm done. This
I'm
is
done.
it. But I had been doing book festivals, and I was always in the rain or the cold, and I don't like to be out in the elements. And
Same.
I was like, all right, the traditional authors are on golf cars, they got escorts, they're indoors. Maybe there's a better way to go about my life if I want to keep writing, because this ain't it. I was like, my daughter was 4 months old. I had left her. I was still breastfeeding, so like my boobs were hard. We're in the rain. It was awful. Like, aside from hanging out with you and Donnie and Don Seals
That's
that
right, because this
weekend,
was the first time we met.
yeah,
Yes.
it was awful. And I was like, all right, I'm done. But then even in my lead up towards Seven Daughters, when I was working on it and trying to do the whole agent thing and another story another day, in the back of my mind was like, you can always do this yourself.
Yeah.
And so I think people have to decide what is success, and it can't be
Yes.
outside accolades, because that's the quickest way to disappointment. Like you talked about being a lead title. I'm also a lead title. But people don't say there's a pressure that comes to that.
Yes.
Because
You have expectations.
everyone wants to get on Threads and talk about what authors, especially Black authors, don't get in terms of advances or support. But what happens when you do get it? There's a
Right.
level of pressure there. There's expectation there. And so you can't let someone else's journey or what it looks like from the outside determine what yours is going to be.
That's right.
How
That's
did
right.
you, when you did your co-parenting book and Church Ladies,
Yeah.
what was it like for you to accept that, okay, these aren't big five titles?
You know what? It's like I was in a bubble. There was so much I didn't know. I had been in the freelance writing world for so long. And so like book publishing was like this big dream. I've just been working on this novel, working on this novel. So I didn't know a lot about publishing itself, other than like getting published in magazines, newspapers, and journals. And so, with the co-parenting book, my ex-husband, who I co-wrote it with, it was his idea. And so, he was like, yeah, people are always complimenting us about how well we co-parent. We should write a book. He said, you should write a book. And so, I was like, but I think it would be more compelling coming from us together. And he was like, all right, cool, bet. And I was like, okay, let me figure out how you write a nonfiction book. Let me holler at you in a minute. And so I looked and I was like, a book proposal? Oh my God. And so I learned everything there was to know about how do you write a book proposal? Because publishers don't want a nonfiction manuscript like they do for a novel or short stories. They want a book proposal for nonfiction. And I dreaded that. But I was still so much a hustle girly that when I learned how to write the book proposal, I then created a webinar to make money called Write Your Damn Book Proposal Already. Because I was like, well, shit, I taught myself. Let me teach some other people and make some money in the process because I still needed to make money. So
Been there, done that.
still was not thinking about Big Five. Like, I don't even know if I knew what that was. By, I mean, I knew publishers. I didn't know about there is a Big Five. So we get the book proposal. We have our agent, who's still my agent today. And she was like, well, she's going to send it out. And there were tears, you know? So she taught me about that. And I don't know that any Big Five publishers were on that. And so I have to give credit to my agent, I think, for my being able to remain happy in this industry. Not happy with everything that happens, but generally it hasn't eaten me alive, because she's never fostered this idea that the Big Five is the goal. That doesn't mean she's playing small. She has been like very honest with me from the beginning about fit. That co-parenting book was never going to be a Big Five book, but she never presented that to me as like a failing or anything. It's like she's done her homework, and these are the tiers. Let's say there were a dozen or so publishers that she thought would be this book would be a good fit for them. And so that's something I've always appreciated about her, that it's never been about Big Five for her. It's what is the book you've written? She's never tried to get me to write a certain kind of book or to go commercial or any of that. She's always just been interested in what do I want to do? What excites me? What are my goals? And so it was like, okay, here's the co-parenting book. All right, here are the tiers. We blew through those tiers and got no's all around. I think we triggered a bunch of people who were like, parents don't get along after divorce. It's like, okay, tell me your parents didn't get along and you still mad about that. Like, they clearly could not have even read the proposal. Just on the premise, they were like, fuck this. No one wants to read about people, co-parents getting along. And that's not what the book was about. It wasn't about us. It was a blueprint. It was a resource for parents who didn't get along. Or if only one of you is trying to be civil, what do? How do you make a parent? You know, it was a very practical book. It was not like, look at us, you know. But that's what the assumption was. Nobody wanted that book. And so then Danielle, my agent, was like, you know, there's this other publisher. She's like, I didn't even include them on the list because, for our purposes in this conversation, it would fall under like scholarly or self-help, like that level right there with university presses. And she said, they don't publish people who don't have letters after their names. So they're publishing clinicians and, you know, people like that. She's like, but I'm gonna send it to them. New Harbinger Publications. They love the idea of a co-parenting book by co-parents, not a social worker, not lawyers, not therapists, but parents, co-parents. And so that's where we got published. But it's what you get with smaller publishers. There's not a lot of marketing support. At the time, it was like, let's try and aim this at as many mommy bloggers as we can, you know? And so the little bit of stuff we got to do event-wise came from our own efforts to market ourselves, because we had a website, we had a blog talk radio show at the time, and so we got our own stuff, and it wasn't a lot, but what we got it ourselves. But they did set up our book launch at Barnes and Noble. My poor co-parent started having chest pains, so he could not come. He was at the hospital, and I was there by myself. And one person came. Our friends didn't even come.
Oh.
But so thank God at that point, again, I had not made that a measure of, you know, was I disappointed? Yes. But it didn't like make me stop. You know, it was just because the grind continued, the hustle continued. And so then with Church Ladies, I don't remember seeing the list. Danielle may have included some Big Five. All I know is the only offer we got was West Virginia University Press. That was it. And we did everything that they say you're not supposed to do. My first book was a short story collection. Nobody, Big Five, they want you to have a novel. I did not have a novel. And again, kudos to Danielle. She knew I was working on a novel. She could have said, let's wait until your novel comes out. And then actually, it was the opposite. I'm struggling with the novel. She's been watching me struggle all these years and trying to help me, trying to encourage me, checking in with me. We both lived in Pittsburgh at the time. And she was rallying, but she also knew that I was writing these other stories, and she would come to my events, readings in the community, or she knew about the story. She was my first reader on everything and continues to be. And so when I was kind of at a dead end with the novel, it was her idea to pivot to a short story collection. So a different agent would have pressured me on that novel, but her philosophy is books come when they come, like babies. You know, and so she never pressured me on that novel. She was like, let's just pivot. And I like these church lady stories. She called them that. She saw that through line. And she said, you know, if you can get three of them published in, you know, lit journals, we'll go out to market with a partial manuscript. Another no-no. Nobody, the Big Five, they're not going to buy a manuscript as a partial.
From an
And it's
unknown
as
writer.
from an unknown. And it's short stories with no novel. Bitches, you crazy. Yes. We clearly, she was just like, this is what
Lulu.
we're gonna do because that's what I had. That's what I had. She was not pushing me to be more palatable to traditional publishing. So, when by the time I got three short stories published, I had written six. And so that was the partial manuscript we went out with. That's the one everybody was like, nah. And then West Virginia was like, yes. And you just need that one yes. And when we all those no's were coming in, was I disappointed? Yes. And I was like, I'll self-publish this book, not as like a consolation prize, but I wanted to finish something. Like I at that point I had gotten bitten by the bug. I'm not finishing this novel no time soon, apparently. I can finish this collection though. Danielle had gotten me some momentum. And so I wanted to do it. And so I said, fine, if you know nobody else wants to publish it, you know, it's disappointing, but I'll publish it myself. Not knowing all that it entailed. Like easy to say, right? I didn't know you. And I like if I'd known you, I'd have been like, okay, tell me what to do or publish me. But West Virginia came through with the offer. And not sometimes when people publish with university presses, they don't have, or maybe mostly they don't have agents. And I'm thankful that I
I'm one
did.
of them.
And you know, because one of the things that university publishers do in their standard contract is try and keep your copyright, which is different than your publishing rights. You should never, ever, 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 ever give anybody your copyright. You're giving them ownership of your IP, your intellectual property. It is not necessary to publish a book. I did a little research on this, and in every instance where a writer said no to a university press wanting their copyright, the press was like, okay, but just think about how many authors don't think they can say no.
I might be one of them. I need to go read that contract.
Girl, they might be publishing your work in anthologies and all kinds of stuff, and they don't even tell you. Like, they just do it because they own it now. They own it.
And so, to that point, when I ended up doing my university press title, I had left television, but you know, you got to make some money. And
Yes.
so I was freelancing and I knew nothing about publishing and literary journals. Like, I still really don't. Like, I think I've submitted like one story, like a month ago, to a literary journal, because like that was so new to me. But I did know I'm a journalist, so I'm like, I do know how to write for an outlet, for a newspaper, or a vertical,
Yes.
whatever. So I was pitching those kinds of stories, and I had this personal essay that went in the Bitter Southerner, and then the
Love
LSU
that.
people reached out to me, and I was like, well, we saw this essay. We're doing a series of books about Louisiana culture. Would you want to write one? And I was like, well, yeah, because like you gonna pay me too? Let's go. Oh, like this is
I'm in.
all brand new to me. And so I had to Google how do you write a book proposal as well. They sent me one I could copy and formulate from because the book is it's real tiny. It's like 35,000 words. So it's not a long book. But like I still had to write the proposal even though they approached me first. And then I got the contract, no agent, no lawyer. I'm just reading it myself. Like, okay, I guess this looks good. Being silly. So like don't do that, as you've heard here. Learn from my mistakes, from what Disha just said. Get a lawyer, negotiate something.
Authors Guild, go to the Authors Guild. Membership is cheap and they do contract review.
That one. Go do that. Don't be like me, being too eager. We can admit my mistakes now that they're out in the open.
It's a safe space. It's a
Right.
safe.
And so, and like that's how that book came about. But even then, I was like, y'all know I'm not like an academic, right? Like I didn't even go to grad school. I got this good BS and I've been minded. Like I'm a journalist. Like I'm not an academic. I'm not a scholar. I'm not a historian. They're like, yeah, no, we got all that, but like you do write. So like go write. And you still have the same processes on a smaller scale. There's not as much money, so there's not as much budget for marketing, but you know, they're still going to edit and then have your work peer reviewed before they even decide to accept it. And there's still a whole apparatus to that level of publishing.
It is. And so with West Virginia, my book was a lead title. So it got more resources. It was prominently placed in all of their marketing materials for that season. They hired a publicist who he's still fielding inquiries for Church Ladies today. I don't know who's paying him. It's not me. But I love Jeremy. And so we're just always going to be connected until he tells me to leave him alone. But it got, I think, an amount of support that's not typical, you know. And you said this earlier about that interesting space of being a Black writer who gets a good deal in publishing when that's not the case. And so it makes it hard on places like Threads when you're just like looking and listening to things and watching stuff, and you're like, that's not true. But people are gonna, if I say something, if I speak, it's gonna be, you know, you don't know what you're talking about. You're an elitist, or that's easy for you to say, or whatever. But we both find ways to share what we know if we can help somebody else along. But as we acknowledge that our experiences are atypical, but they're not just atypical for Black people, they're just atypical in general. Most people don't get the deal that you got for Seven Daughters. Most people don't get the deal I got for my next two books. But that doesn't mean that there's not still bias in the industry, like nuance. This social media is not the place for that kind of nuance where these multiple things can be true. You're not going to use me as a shield against arguments about bias in publishing, because that's real. We exist, you and I exist, our deals exist, and publishing is still 90 plus percent white. And there's bias, and all of these things are true. And just because we haven't experienced the worst of this industry, you and I, it doesn't mean that we don't know things that can be useful to other people.
I mean, I think if anybody at this point is still listening to this conversation or has been around Black and Published all the years that I've been doing this podcast from my closet, then you know you have heard all the journeys of everyone. Like Nisha was my third guest when Church Ladies had just come out. And so we're here all these years later, and I've had different levels of authors. Some have been indie, some have been traditionally published, some go back and forth between indie and traditional publishing, depending on what the title is and what their contracts are for and what it is that they're doing or trying to work on. And none of that is a detraction from what hopefully everybody is here for, which is the writing. Like how the book gets out is secondary, I would hope, to the writing.
But and people have to be honest about that. And if you really can say, I want my book out in the world, you know, this is the best story I could write. I took my time with it. I poured my heart and soul into this. I hired a developmental editor and a copy editor, you know, on and on and on. Or, you know, I didn't fight my editor at this traditional publishing company over revision after revision after revision. Like, you're doing the work and you are proud of that, whatever comes next. But I think what people run into is assuming that it's always sweet if it's traditional publishing. That's one assumption that, you know, I want to disabuse people of, because you and I talk about frustrations that are unique to traditional publishing, the delays. There's a lot of waiting, there's a lot of uncertainty, and so forth and so on. So all of these paths have their pros and their cons. And being clear with yourself about, do you really just want to have your book out? Because sometimes when people say, you know what, I'm not going to go the traditional route because I just want to get this book out. And then they get the book out and then they realize, oh, wait, marketing. So I think to survive this business, you have to have a level of self-awareness that it takes a lot, at least for me, it's taken a lot to get there. Self-awareness, maturity. I'm not always the most mature. Patience, certainly not patient. Learning how to deal with disappointment, all of those things, all of that comes to bear. And then you're sitting here trying to figure out, okay, now given my neuroses, given my limitations and strengths, what is the best path for me? And I don't think there's anything wrong with the approach that says, I'm going to try for traditional publishing. And if that doesn't work out, then, I'll do something else and like working through the paths that way. I don't think there's anything wrong with
And that
that.
was my exact journey. It was, I'm going to try. And I tried, and we got to no sales. The acquiring editor liked it. It went to marketing or went to whatever the next room was. And they were like, no, we're not going to buy this. And so then it was like, okay, Nikisha, regroup. And that's how I started self-publishing. But like, that was still a goal. But I mean, I found other goals along the way, and that just makes my journey fuller. And like, now you talk about sitting in all the foolishness. Like, I have 5 months of anxiety ahead of me. I wait for Seven Daughters to come out, and I'm just like, all right, so we're just gonna sit in the discomfort, knowing that I've done the best that I can do. I've written the book, I made all the edits, and I show up where I'm supposed to, and I try to talk to people on the internet about it, even though that's not my favorite thing to do.
And that's tricky too, because outside looking in, it's like, oh, that's cute, you're worried. Bet your bank account's not worried,
Baby, I got two kids and a mortgage.
But that's the thing, people be pocket watching though.
Like,
People be
don't count my
pocket.
pockets.
Exactly,
I got two kids and a
exactly.
mortgage. Like, you want to know what I did with my advance? I got a roof on my house. Like, you want to talk about it? I got a roof. I had some major work done in the house because there was a leak for all the years that I was married, and I had to get that fixed, and it was not cheap. So yeah, don't count my pockets.
And taxes. Can we talk about taxes and
Man, when
how?
you paying Uncle Sam a salary, very humbling.
It is so humbling. And in traditional publishing, if a deadline gets moved, that fucks with your money. But Uncle Sam's deadline never changes, right? So that's a whole episode right there. That should be like a business of publishing episode.
My publishing date got moved. I ain't getting no money this year. Don't watch my pockets. We over here on my 9 to 5 check.
Oh, yeah, my book got pushed back. Oh, at this point, it's 2 years. I sold it in 2023, in 1 year, 1 year. Let me not be dramatic. 1 year. I sold it in 2023. It was to come out this year, but it's going to
Same.
come out in September of next year. But you're in these contracts, however lucrative they are, your payment dates are based not on calendar dates, but milestones. So
Yes.
it's when the book goes into production. So if you push that back a year, like you said, I did not get money. You don't get money unless you push a little bit, but that's another conversation. And this is why your agent, again, I mean, I feel like there's parallels between choosing the publishing path and choosing an agent. This is why your agent needs to be someone who really knows, has your best interest in mind, and isn't just, well, if you're not big five, then getting a big deal, then you're kind of lower on my totem pole of priorities. I mean, everybody does have to prioritize, but your agent should be a fan of your writing. They should be a cheerleader. They should be your biggest advocate because it's literally their job to advocate for
And
you.
they need to talk about you like you would talk about you when you're not in the room.
Exactly. That's the bar, not, oh my God, I finally got an agent. And agents can be fired, and they should be fired if they are not acting in your best interest consistently, if they're not accessible, if they are not honest with you. And sometimes when agents act the way they do and it's not in the writer's best interest, it's because they know the writer won't fire them. Because the way it works is most agents won't talk to you if you're still represented by someone else. So if you fire your agent, that's a huge leap of faith that you're going to be able to find another agent. And so that's why it's important to remember that it's better to have no agent than a bad one. Because you're holding on to that bad one for fear you won't get another one. Meanwhile, the clock's ticking. And if you give them that next book, now you're stuck with them for another book because now they represent that book.
And I think that goes for everything in publishing. It's better to have no agent than a bad agent. It's better to have no deal than a bad deal. Intuition and like being able to sit with the whys of it all are really like having that emotional intelligence to not just say yes at every turn, but to really like think through, because as much as this is art, there's also strategy, right? And so you have to be strategic at no matter which path you're taking, which journey you're on, and know what it is that you want, because just saying yes to anything, it's gonna look like it. You're gonna get scammed.
Because that, I mean, that I got a book, okay, I got questions. Like, I'm happy for you tentatively. Let's talk about how is this book coming along? Who, who's publishing it? What are they, what's required of you? And again, that's how when we don't have the capacity for nuance, it's like, oh, you're just hating or you're being elitist because you're scrutinizing non-traditional publishing. It's like, no, I don't want people to be scammed. I want to be happy for you, but I can't be happy for you now because you got a book. And then 6 months from now, we find out that, they gave you literally what is physically a book. Yes, but now what?
Yeah. So in the end, I hope this was helpful. Please don't get scammed. Listen to this before you sign anything, before you say yes to
And
anything.
we're on Threads. I mean, I hate to speak for you, but I think if people ask us questions,
I am on Threads. I will respond. I am not taking on authors, so don't ask. Yes,
find
I
someone like her, but not her,
Yes, I
is
have
what she's
published
saying.
other people in the past, and I may do so again. At the moment, I am not in the headspace to do so. Thank you. And I'm gonna leave it there.
Management.
Big thank you to Deisha Filial for joining me today on Black and Published. You can follow Deisha on the socials on Instagram and Threads at Deisha Filial. You can also follow the show on Instagram and Threads at Black and Published, and that's BLK and Published. Now for real. That's our show for the week and season. I'll holla at y'all next year for season 6, premiering January 6th, 2026, because you know, The Seven Daughters of Dupree is coming out. Please pre-order the book, and I'll talk to you in the new year about all the things: how I wrote it, how I finally got my agent, and how we sold it to my editor in 7 days. There's much to discuss. I'll talk to you then. Peace.
What's going on, family? This is Derek Young
and Ramonda Young,
owners of both Mahogany Books and the Mahogany Books Podcast Network.
We really want to thank each and every one of you for listening to this episode. And if you enjoyed what you just heard, drop us a review and rate us on whatever platform you download podcasts on.
We truly appreciate each and every one of you for supporting us and making us your go-to for Black books. And we look forward to connecting with you all sometime in the future.
Thank you again, fam. And always remember, Black books matter.